Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
If you are incredibly nerdy, like me, you had a moment from last week's State of the Union that you picked as a favorite. Maybe it worked as theater. Maybe it spoke to something deeply important to you. My moment was about snack food.
Too many corporations raise prices to pad their profits, charging more and more for less and less. That's why we're cracking down on corporations engaged in price gouging and deceptive pricing.
It was about a half an hour into Biden's speech when he took this populist turn. The president called out chips and candy companies for fleecing the average Joe.
In fact, the snack companies think you won't notice if they change the size of the bag and put a hell of a lot fewer, same size bag, put fewer chips in it. No, I'm not joking.
I like this moment because it gave a casual listener something very concrete in their own lives to pay attention to. And it said, if this makes you mad, I'm trying to fix it. David Dan from over at the American Prospect, he was watching this play out. He says potato chips and candy bars, they were just the beginning of what Biden's up to here.
Yeah, I mean, it's the emergence of a policy infrastructure, really.
David says this because of what came after the snack jokes.
Look, I'm also getting rid of junk fees. Those hidden fees at the end of your bill that are there without your knowledge.
Unlike the packaging for your junk food, junk fees are something the president can try to control. And Biden is calling these fees out one by one. Did a credit card charge you because your payment was late? The administration says that's a junk fee. Does your landlord level a surcharge for cable TV or even taking out your trash? That's junk too. Since he came into office, Biden has been cutting down on fees like this, bit by bit. Now that it's an election year, and Americans seem to feel lukewarm at best about their inflated economy, Biden is doubling down on his junk fee fight.
Typically, when we think about inflation, we think about, oh, that's the Federal Reserve's job. That's their job to deal with monetary policy and interest rates. And that's the way we deal with inflation. We dial a knob up or down. But this case is saying, well, actually, that knob up or down isn't going to affect whether a bank is using extortionist fees to grab money out of vulnerable people. So we need a different architecture.
Do you think Americans are just going to be hearing a whole lot more about junk fees in the next year as the presidential campaign heats up?
I think the Biden administration hopes so.
But as you said, the Biden administration has been talking about fees, fines, since the beginning. It's been creating this whole new idea of corporations are trying to fleece you in this way. Do you think when goods and services get cheaper for people, if goods and services get cheaper for people because the junk fees are removed, do you think people will look at their bills and say, Joe Biden did that?
Well, that's the age-old question, right? I mean, transforming and moving people from saying, hey, finally, I'm not being ripped off, to finally, I'm not being ripped off and this person is responsible, is a question of politics.
Today on the show, why you are about to hear a whole lot more about junk fees. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
Before we dig in on junk fees, I should say, my husband just started a job at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB. I wanted to be upfront about that because the CFPB is going to come up a lot in this story. David Dayan says the head of the agency even came up with the term junk fees.
I mean, these things were not called junk fees until 2021. It was Rohit Chopra, I believe, the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, that put a name to this feeling of being ripped off.
Yeah, because junk fees is like basically a pejorative. So I think it is useful to define it rather than just say junk fees.
Right, exactly. So in the CFPB's case, they were talking about bank fees. They were talking about late fees on your credit cards, overdraft fees. You know, when you overdraw your account, what you learn is that the bank has signed you up for a system where they'll pay that charge, but they'll charge you $35 every time that you overdraw your account. And then they do something called structuring, where let's say you made a $5 charge, a $100 charge, and a $2 charge. They will move the $100 charge to the top so that you've overdrawn your account. And then they'll put those smaller charges below it, and each one will trigger an overdraft fee.
So while you have like a $35 overdraft fee, all of a sudden now you have three $35 overdraft fees in one day when you thought, oh, I'm managing my money here.
That's correct. The CFPB talked about this in those terms of banking. Then when the Biden administration started talking about it, a lot of the things they looked at were travel and entertainment. So airfare. The junk fees of increased baggage fees, increased fees for your seat.
Yeah, United Airlines was charging fees for you to sit next to your family, right?
Yes. If you wanted to request a seat for a child that was next to the parent, they were charging fees. There's actually an organization that runs a boot camp for airlines on ancillary fees.
Well, they run a boot camp for airlines. Sorry, explain that. What?
Yes. They invite executives of the airlines to come to a two-day camp to figure out what fees they can lard on the public. They've been doing this for years.
Oh, my God. That makes my blood boil.
Yes, it should. Another one was hotels. So all of a sudden, these things started showing up on people's bills called resort fees. It might not be a resort hotel. There might not be really a pool or really anything that sounds like the lap of luxury, but they would just throw a $20 resort fee on your bill.
These things like resort fees are part of a broader problem, one that goes beyond penalties or add-ons. David is identifying a specific way that junk fees stitch themselves into the fabric of our everyday lives, through a tactic known as drip pricing.
Drip pricing is sort of the technical term for when the price of a particular item, particularly that you're buying online, changes as you go through the purchase process. Maybe you're going to Ticketmaster, you want to see that Taylor Swift show, right? And it says that the price is $100 for the ticket. So you click on that, it says pick your seats, you pick your seat. Then there's a processing fee of $25 or a convenience fee of $15.
Convenience fee. That's my favorite.
Yes, it's very convenient for them. Yeah. And at the end, you're paying a much higher price than what you were initially advertised. And it's a drip, drip, drip. Let's say you're going to rent. You're seeking out a rental unit. You have to usually fill out an application. And so there's an application fee tagged to that. There's something called a trash valet fee, which says if you just put your trash outside your unit, we'll have someone go pick it up, then we'll charge you $25 for that. There were pet fees, there were guest fees, there were fees on how you pay your rent. The craziest one I heard about was they called it January fees, which were just fees because it's January.
No.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah, one South Carolina housing advocate you spoke to, I think, said that they were seeing apartments advertised for $1,100, but then once you actually got in the door, it was $1,800 a month, which is crazy.
Yeah, and that's really not uncommon. There's no way to comparison shop if you sign a lease and you think you're paying $1,100, and then you get in there and you realize over the course of a month with all the fees, the junk fees, you're paying $1,800.
It is one thing for the CFPB to identify a problem, but there are so many industries using these fees that getting rid of them has been a process, and the Biden administration has had to get creative.
They've done it in a couple different ways. The first way is what they call all-in pricing. If you're searching, shopping for a hotel, a ticket with Ticketmaster, the first time that you encounter a price, that has to be the whole price. You can't be lured in by a lower price only to pay a higher one later.
Okay, I like the sound of that.
Yeah, so all-in pricing, they've gotten voluntary agreements from some of the companies to do that. But the Federal Trade Commission right now is putting together a junk fee rule that would mandate that. The second thing that they've done is caps. One of them is the CFPB saying, okay, we're going to cap the amount of money that a credit card company is allowed to charge for a late fee.
Right. I'm used to seeing like a $30 late fee, and that's not going to be possible anymore, right?
Yeah. The average was $32. It will be capped at $8. It represents the cost of collection. So if you're late and they have to involve a third party collection company, they calculated that what that costs a credit card company is about $8. So they were charging four times as much as what it costs them in credit card late fees.
One of the things the president is doing as he gears up for a presidential election and thinks about this last year of his first term is creating a strike force to investigate fees. Why is that important? Like, how is that going to change things?
Well, obviously, it's just been launched, so that remains to be seen. But the idea is that a lot of these junk fees and increases in prices are actually illegal under existing statutes. There are statutes saying that you can't engage in unfair, deceptive or abusive acts and practices. The CFPB has a law like that, and other organizations, other agencies of the federal government have a law like that.
So why haven't they been enforced?
The problem is that a lot of these bureaucracies don't really talk to one another. There's no sort of individual who overlooks the whole system and says, hey, that's an illegal fee. And the agency of jurisdiction should really do something about that. That's what this strike force is designed to do, to enable quicker action on these types of junk fees.
With the Biden administration pushing to tackle junk fees and pricing, are corporations and banks on the back foot? Like, are they running scared? Like, how are they reacting to this push?
Well, what I found in covering corporations for many years, that the typical reaction begins with PR.
I imagine they're not calling these junk fees.
No, certainly not. There have been efforts to say, okay, we will give an all-in price. We'll make this voluntary pledge. We'll let you know what the price is up front. There have been a couple industries, including Ticketmaster, that has said they would do that, although whether they are doing that or not is an open question. There are other companies like banks that have actually eliminated some of their fees. So we talked about overdraft before. The largest banks in America have actually eliminated their overdraft charges because they were concerned that the CFPB was going to enforce various laws that would have found that them liable for that. So we're talking about Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Citibank. All of these large banks have said that they're going to forego overdraft fees. But the voluntary pullback came before the rule was finalized. So I think that's kind of interesting that just the sort of threat.
So is it a negotiating tactic? Like, we'll back off on that. Like, do we really need a rule here?
It was probably a way to try to get them not to put the rule together, which they eventually did anyway. But it's interesting that just the threat of enforcement on some of these issues ends up being a credible deterrent.
After the break, there's one place where junk fees are still running wild, and it's a warning to all of us. You've said that kind of the last frontier for junk fees is the criminal justice system. Can you explain that? Can you explain why?
I see it as this is sort of the most extreme and precise case of junk fees. Here we have a literally captive audience, a captive group of inmates who rely on the system to provide anything that they need over the course of their stay. So that includes the commissary, that includes, you know, inmates make a shockingly low amount of money in prison jobs, but they have to have a bank account to hold on to that. The one that I think is really incredible is that prisoners in the U.S. are pretty much the only people in the world that have to pay for a stamp for an email. And that's both to send it and to receive it. They're hit with about 35 cents on every email they receive and read, in addition to every email they send. Think about how many emails you get in the course of a day. 35 cents a piece, it adds up.
I wouldn't mind if the spammers had to pay every time.
And that would be good.
But yeah.
There are services that offer quote unquote free tablets in prison. So the inmates can have these forms of communication. But anything you do on that tablet costs money. So they give you sort of the thing for free, like a pusher gives a free hit, but then you have to pay if you want a song to listen to or look at a video or send a card. Anything that you do, the junk fees can just go up and up and up and up.
I was struck by this fact that you gave in some of your reporting that even when you get released from prison, these prison junk fees can follow you around. Because you'll get given a card with all of your leftover prison money on it. And that card is full of fees. So it's like you have a choice. Do I use this card and rack up fees? Or do I wait and maybe not be able to go grocery shopping?
And the sad thing is that if you don't use the card, you're hit for a fee, an inactivity fee.
Oh, my gosh.
So, wow. Yeah, they're inescapable. And as you say, at the end of this, if you have any money left, if they haven't taken all of it away from you already, if you have any money left when you're released, these release cards have a number of junk fees on them.
I wonder why you think addressing this is like a final frontier.
Well, I feel like what we've seen from the Biden administration is, first off, they started talking a lot about travel and entertainment. And that's really like upper middle class people who are pissed off because they have to pay a resort fee on their hotel. And those people vote. You know, a lot of those people are engaged citizens that pay attention to politics. Then they started talking about rental housing, and certainly that affects a large group of people, millions and millions of renters who have been seeing this more and more. So that was reasonable as a political imperative. You know, when you're talking about prisoners, these are the poorest people in society. Many of them can't vote because they lose rights to the franchise after they leave, you know, as soon as they're convicted. Their families are usually very poor. They vote at lower rates. They are often routinely ignored by the political system.
Because it's like, will you address this for these people where the benefit is just that it's the right thing to do?
Yeah. And I mean, I shouldn't say that we haven't seen any activity there. Prison phone rates, which were incredibly extortionate, have gone down in many jurisdictions. Connecticut passed a law, New York City, San Francisco. But it's a very difficult climb.
I wonder if you think it's important to pay attention to what's happening in this hidden community, the prison community, because it's explanatory in some way. Like, it shows what happens, what kind of decisions banks and companies make when they think they're really protected. Like, it reveals a motivation, almost.
It certainly reveals a motivation. I would also say it's an early warning. You know, this is almost an experimental lab. We've seen these junk fees in prisons for a long time. And it's kind of a harbinger of what's next for all of us.
What is next for all of us if we don't do something about it?
Well, if you think about your what they call the social graph, you are tracked all over the World Wide Web. The companies that have that data know virtually everything about you. They know when you make your purchases. They know what purchases you've made. They also have a pretty good sense of how much money you make, and they could probably target how much you're willing to pay and maximize that in your personalized price so that your price for a particular item is different than my price for a particular item.
I do not like the sound of that.
That is the dystopian future that I think we're headed toward.
Is it even legal?
That's a very good question. I think we're going to see a number of lawsuits that are coming out over the next couple of years to see what's happening there. Amazon had a program called Project Nessie, which was an algorithmic program that indeed was intended to raise prices for individuals. The most insane example of this that I know of was a study that was taken, at least somewhere in Europe, that involved Uber. Now, we know that there is surge pricing on Uber, right?
Yeah, I've gotten used to that.
But what this study found is that rides were being charged at higher rates when people's phone batteries were low. They knew that that individual seeking a ride was somewhat desperate. And so Uber knows how high your battery is and how low it is, and they will charge more in the algorithm under that circumstance. Those are things that I think fall under this category of deceptive.
It's interesting to me that the administration is taking on these junk fees mainly through the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And I was thinking about that because the CFPB is under direct threat right now. Like, there's a case at the Supreme Court that challenges the right of this agency to exist at all. What does that tell you about how durable some of these changes to junk fees are going to be? Like, can this new way of thinking about fees and fines last if the agency that enforces them is in peril?
Well, it tells me, first of all, that the CFPB is an effective agency.
Because it's pissed people off.
Because the business community is so mad about it, they're saying that it shouldn't exist. Now, we'll see what happens with that particular lawsuit that you're talking about. The CFPB has been under legal threat since its inception in 2010. There have been countless lawsuits over the constitutionality, of CFPB's structure, of its funding, virtually everything down the line. They survived all of those for the most part. And I actually think if you listen to the Supreme Court's arguments on this, they're going to survive this one as well.
But they're having to fight pretty hard.
There's no question. And who runs these agencies really does matter. The Trump administration's selections for the CFPB did not go hard on overdraft or credit card late fees or junk fees more generally. So, yeah, personnel is policy, as Elizabeth Warren has said. Who is in those positions and what they're willing to do actually matters.
David, I'm really grateful for your time. Thanks for coming on the show and doing all this reporting.
Thanks for having me.
David Dayan is the executive editor of The American Prospect. He's also the author of Monopolized: Life in the Age of Corporate Power. And that's our show. If you are a fan of What Next, the best way to support our work is to join Slate Plus. Go on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to find out how. What Next is produced by Paige Osborne, Elena Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Anna Phillips, and Madeline Ducharme. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little boost from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you back here next time.